Hello, everyone, and welcome to Padawan Unlimited, a Star Wars Unlimited trading card game podcast and YouTube channel. I am your host, Gil, your eternal format host. And today, I am joined by the two members of the trilogy format.
There you go.
Rob and Corey, how you guys doing?
Call me an icon, maybe, you know.
Doing well. I missed you guys last week, so sorry for that.
The holidays, yeah. You know, it's family stuff.
It's Thanksgiving had me all messed up. I thought it was Friday, and it was not. It was Wednesday.
It's all good. As long as someone's up doing the show for the Thursday release, I think we're solid. I'm actually dealing with a fever today for the last couple of days, so I'm like, okay, I think I'm finally getting over it. Anyway, we don't have a lot of logistics today, but if you are new to the channel, please remember to like, subscribe, tell your friends. We love the support, love giving stuff away. We're trying to get to that 500 sub.
So close.
25 away.
Yeah, 25 away. And you know what? I like that we're not growing too fast. I know that a lot of content creators, they want to get to like the couple, like the thousands of views per video, et cetera, like that. And I know we could have done that. Like if we had just pushed content 2, 3, 4 times a week, we could talk about deck techs. But at the end of the day, like I like where we're at and I like the people who have joined us. So anyone, if you're a listener, as always, thank you for supporting us. If you're old and new listener, if you're a new listener, please consider listening for the foreseeable future. Because especially if, you know, Star Wars Unlimited goes along, goes the distance, wink wink. So
spoilers, Gil, spoilers.
Yeah, go ahead.
But, well, I was gonna say, like, honestly, thanks to everybody who's active on the Discord as well. You know, that's been one of the big pillars, you know, aside from the podcasts and the interactions there, pillars of our community where we get to interact with you guys a lot. So
yeah,
shout out to everybody who's on there and saying hey every day.
Yeah, love it. And the deck tech stace is like really cool. Really happy about that. Like I learned some stuff. I'm like, oh, that's some great tech. Anyway, before we get into that, let's go on to the collection segment. Corey, you run that. So where are we at?
Yeah, let's do it. Well, we had a FFG stream today.
We did.
And they showed some stuff. They talked about the Lawless Time. We talked briefly on it last week, you and I. And so they spoiled the set of some spotlight decks from last week because PAX Unplugged happened. They were there. And this is coming a little later due to them being traveling and PAX Unplugged and all of that. But they did show some cool art for some cards. I'm curious what you guys think those cards represent and the art represents for those cards.
You know me. I'm surrounded by nothing but fear and dead.
Yeah, exactly. So they did show off. Jack got to pick a piece of art to show off. And one of them was the Vader sequence in the Marvel comics where he's surrounded by rebels and they think they got him, but they don't got him.
He basically slaughters an entire platoon.
No, it was like, there was like a battalion. He's like, and the guy's like, it's not enough like to get Vader down.
Do you think that's a unit?
I think the card is literally going to be called, I'm sorry, surrounded by fear and dead or fear and dead men, something like
that. Yeah, I agree. I think it's an event. I think it's, I hope it's at least a rare. That's a,
you know what it might be? It might be like the ground equivalent of hyperspace disaster,
but like actually good. It's actually playable.
All just kill all ground units.
Yeah. Kill all ground units.
Oh my God.
I mean, right.
That like, would be amazing.
It would fit with the art.
You know, FFG at the designers have been pretty good. I won't say perfect, but pretty good of like designing cards to fit the theme. So I could see that being a case. If it is a rare or legendary, which I don't think it's legendary because like that's just too, I feel like it's too early for that. But I think that if it was like something like that, I hope it's a rare and I hope it has some playability for sure.
Yeah, no. I mean, if Vader's on it, you want it to be able to play it. Like, I think the only card Vader's on that hasn't really seen play is Death Star Plans, and he's in the background. So,
yeah, well, that's interesting.
He's on the mat, and that mat sees a lot of play for me.
I will say the card I liked was the Malakili card. It's a special card.
Yeah.
So it's going to get some of the interesting treatments because it's going to be in the starter deck as well as the other component, as well as the probably the weekly play packs, I think. That card as a starter card seems good to me.
He's interesting.
Like, definitely interesting because it gives boost creatures, which I think is going to be very important for homeworlds. as a set. So it's like leading up into the new sets, which I think is great. And it gives another trait, which is
Giving Underworld good. Out is really good, turns out.
Yeah, Underworld is
I guess with Cad Bane going away, it may not be as strong, but then Jabba's picking up on that Underworld keyword now. So the new Jabba in Lawless Time.
But there's also a lot of Spectre love we saw. They talked about Spectres. If you are a fan of Spectres, you're going to be feasting this set. So
Gil was very happy about this.
I'm going to buy all of those cards. Like, I don't care. I hope they're like, I don't know what the procedures are going to look like. I don't know if they're going to be showcases. I hope they reprint a new Hera that is actually playable and competitive because I want to play a competitive Hera deck.
What I want to say is Hera was my first showcase that I got. Hair was my favorite. Well, it's like one of my favorite art pieces too. And I was waiting. I'm like, all right, eventually Hair is gonna be good. We're gonna get a Hair deck at some point. And it's like, well, wait, what? You're gonna give us a Hair deck after we get a rotator out? Not only Eternal. Oh my gosh, come on.
Yeah. Hey, look, Hair Lake Country was hot there for like a hot second.
Yeah, exactly. A hot second. But yeah, the art piece for that's cool. Like they showed off the Rebels package essentially with Hera and Zeb and he's one with the Force probably.
Mm-hmm. So a listener actually mentioned that the picture that they have that was revealed is Ezra with long hair. That is when Kanan was still alive in the timeline.
True, true.
So there's
what episode was
I don't think this is an episode. I think the image that they shared is just like a reprint, or like they just some artist decided to do that. I don't think that's actually from an episode. If someone knows, put that in comments.
Yeah.
All right.
I feel like there has to have been an episode where like Kanan gets captured or something, or he's like off on a side mission somewhere. I watched it not that long ago. I just can't think.
All right, guys. My prediction that our piece is going to be on a card. That is going to be multi-aspect card.
For sure.
Right? It's got to be.
I mean, they already showed Zeb as three aspects. Like,
right. Do you think it's going to be like a four-aspect card? And here's why. No. And here's why. You got Zeb. Zeb is blue.
Yep.
Blue and red.
Sabina's red. Ezra is, I guess, like, I'm talking about colors. So like a hair is green, obviously. Yeah.
Ezra's got to be yellow,
and
right?
And Ezra's yellow. Like, it's a four-aspect card. Like,
that would be crazy.
That would be sick.
Technically five if you throw in heroic.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if they want to do that, they don't have to. But, like, that would be crazy. I don't know if they go up to four. I think three is the max that we see.
Yeah.
But that would be interesting. That would be crazy. Especially with the Leia leader. Because it's like, her power, the spotlight leader is like she gives experience tokens for every aspect that's on the battlefield or something like that, every different aspect. So that would just be like nuts. It's like boom, here I have four XP right away.
OP.
Yeah. Well, and I hadn't really thought about it, but the Leia leader from this set, it's everyone that doesn't share, right? Shares an aspect. Yeah, different aspects. Yeah.
Different aspects. Yeah.
The new Leia. Which I think her showcases would be very interesting. It's like the Endor like version of Leia.
Yeah,
Has a when deployed ability, choose a unit. Could be her. She comes out as a 2/2/1/5, which is kind of weak. But Overwhelm, Rebel, when deployed, choose a unit. Give an experience token to that unit for each different aspect among units you control. So if you have a really wide board with this multi-aspect thing, she could come out like a 7/7. You know, like, I don't know, like something ridiculous, right?
You can give it to any unit, not just her, right?
Yes.
So it says choose a unit. So it doesn't need to be her. You can just like flip her, give experience to something else, and away you go.
Yeah. Which maybe not for Constructed, could be more of like a Twin Suns format D type thing. But yeah, I don't know.
That's cool. And last,
go ahead.
No, I just wanted to talk to you guys about some of the market with showcases. You mentioned showcases. I was curious if you guys knew what the number one showcase was.
Like right now?
Right now?
Yeah.
Like out of all sets?
All sets.
Anakin?
Like, most, like, as in, like, the most valuable?
Most valuable.
Anakin?
Starting December 1st. What's the most valuable?
Starting,
as of December 1st.
Rob says Anakin. I would say it's probably still Boba. I was not thinking, like, Boba 1.
So, according to Porg Depot, those guys, they do a great job on their website. They have the current top 10, December 1st, Darth Revan. Is Revan still number one.
Yo, he's so good.
At
he's
so 229.
Hot leader.
Oh. And then Yoda, Sensing Darkness, is number two at 227. Just
Yoda's, I mean, I've seen a lot of Yoda out there. Well, so we'll talk about that during the main section. But
yeah.
You know what's probably on the lowest tier of a showcase? Let me show you. It's probably Newt Gunray, which I purchased one.
Oh, I purchased my gosh.
It's nice. It was like 30 something bucks. I was like, you know what? I don't want to pay shipping on these cards that I'm about to get. So let me just get a beefy card to make sure it's free shipping. Right, that's right. Bad. That's bad financial decisions, I'll say. But I got the Newt Gunray showcase for my showcase collection. So I have quite a few pages now of showcases. I don't have all of them though. So working on. Yeah,
I had a new edition as well. Sam pulled this boy.
A DJ.
Yep. Benicio del Toro in the flesh.
It's a good card.
Very cool. I don't know if you guys check out the episode last week.
Which episode?
Well, our episode last week, Rob, but I also pulled a DJ.
Did you really? That's funny. Yeah, I still haven't seen any decks with him yet, but I feel like someone is going to crack him. Like, I feel like there's too much potential.
And Constructed or Standard, maybe not so much, but Twin Suns, I think he could be really interesting for sure.
I don't know. I mean, like, I feel like Constructed, like, just double yellow is always there. There's so many good double yellow cards. Like, and you just get it. You're
pure
just
and
getting it.
Aspects are just so strong. Those cards, losing those cards. Is
I think at the end of the day, if we look at each set and the cards that come out, right, and the types of things that come out. The way FFG has been doing like leaders and teasing what the future is going to look like is every like the previous sets have just a taste. So, for example, Chancellor Palpatine with the double flip side, just a taste of what would you do if you have this thing with Anakin, more Champion Mortis, like things that you could use different aspects to your advantage in your deck.
Mm-hmm.
This one, which again, is being more and more relevant when we think about like Kylo's or, you know, turning on Anakin, the legendary unit card, right? These are things that they tease as time goes on. I think the DJ leader at this point is just a tease for this next set because like now it's a multi-aspect thing and maybe he might be unlocked, but I think it's just more of like a, every time we see this, expect it to be part of the future, like the next rotation of sets, I think. And so,
yeah, that's a good approach because it's like might not be good right now, but just wait.
Which then translates to different values, right? Because like you might think that like the DJ card, a DJ leader might not be valuable right now, but if you're trying to predict the market, quote unquote, maybe you invest in getting it cheap so you can sell it high. If you are, again, you're an investor, which I would love to talk about. We'll wait until the last segment. We talk about the future of Swoo, but like, I want to talk about the market. I want to talk about all those things a little bit more, before, but I don't want to, you know, dig too deep at this point. Corey, what else you got for us?
That's all I had for you guys in my collection. Did you have anything else?
No. I think the last thing for me is that I, am actually kind of blinging out a deck for the first time this set. Like I've never like bought the hyperspaces. No.
Okay.
I mean, like hyperspaces.
Okay.
Like, well, first of all, if you saw my decks in the past, you'd be like, Gil, like, especially if you have like, if you want like three of the same, you'll be so pissed off at me because I'll have a regular version, a hyperspace version, a foil version.
Gil's chaos deck.
It's a chaos deck. Yeah. You won't even realize it. You'll be like, oh my God, I hate the way Gil plays this deck. Now I'm like, okay. All right, let me get some GC cards in there. Let me get some hyperspace. Like I got three hyperspace resupplies. I was like, all right, I'm gonna invest a little bit in a deck just to make it pretty. Which makes me think about like when you look at prices, I don't know if you're doing any market watch, but there's some cars out there right now that are this is actually last thing, that are going like crazy. I don't know if someone's like buying everything out or whatever, but like, have you seen the Darth Treya card and how much of a spike of that car, that in value that card has had recently?
Yeah, I saw it was up pretty high for, isn't it? Yeah. It's like in the it's
definitely
near 20, right?
Overpriced right now from what I'm thinking.
Yeah, like Darth Treya went from like a hyperspace card, went from like a $33 to $55 or something. Lord of Betrayal. Who's that? That's not Darth Treya.
That's Lord of Betrayal is what's his name?
That Nihilus. Is Darth Treya.
That is Darth Treya. Yeah, because Nihilus is Lord of Hunger and Sion is Lord of Pain.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. I don't know where that.
Spike happened right December 1st ish. It looks like because it went from, what's happening here? It went from like less than $20, $16, to a price of $40 at one point.
Yeah, someone's like building these like, I think someone's like making like a Talzin yellow deck or something, like it has to be like a Talzin thing or like a yellow blue villainy deck, because fully armed and operational hyperspace also increased like crazy, and I'm just like, wow, this is like, I don't know what's going on here, like there's something going on, maybe there's some secret tech out there, I don't know, but anyway,
yeah, we're gonna find out.
You never know with this.
Yeah, the regular Treya card is at $16 right now, average.
I feel good about getting those at the gate now.
Like it was under $7 at the beginning of November. And then,
yeah,
today.
Crazy.
Interesting. Anyway. I'm curious to see if what's popping off with it.
Yeah. Maybe that's segue into the next topic. Maybe that might be part of the meta for the Financial Qualifiers this next weekend. So let's go on to that, Rob. What's on your mind?
Well, so it's kind of, we're in a bit of a lull right now. So like there weren't any major tournaments this past weekend. You know, we had Beattle 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. Yeah, 2 weeks ago. But this was kind of like a quiet weekend. And then we've got PQs beginning to start to pop up. So I'm kind of curious, you know, on your guys' thoughts on this, but like what the, like, people are going to react to what shouldn't be at all. And I think the big one that people are looking at right now is you kind of alluded to it earlier, Gil, it's the Yodas and it's the Hans, right? So like the Yoda Tarkin Town deck, I think is one that people are trying to kind of tech against. So right now, just in general hero. Oh, and also, sorry, Anakin Data Vault. Like those are the ones that were kind of like big up there, and hero in general is in a very good place. I think kind of riding a little bit on the back of Karis Nemec, because Nemec is just cracked. I mean, that card is just dumb. It's a 3/2. You kill it, it drops out a spy that comes in ready. So like you trade up without Anakin, you trade up to 5. Like there's so much value in that card, and it's only a 2 cost. And that really sets the tone through these. And so you'll notice like a lot of the Yoda deck rides that one a lot. There's what's the other one that uses it? Oh, I can't even remember.
Anakin Data
Vault? Well, yeah, the Anakin deck in particular. Anakin, that thing is nuts. It kills leaders. Like you drop it and you throw a 3/2 into a leader, then you get a 2/2. Well, sorry, you get a 3/2 into a leader that you pump. So now it does 5 damage. And then you have a 2/2, or sorry, a 0/2 that goes to a 2/2 to finish off a 7 health leader, or if like there's so much value.
So Anakin Data Vault can punch up. I think if you look at, so if anyone who's like, again, you're just getting into the competitive scene, right? And you want to know, you want to like learn if your deck is good, what decks are good, what decks are being played in preparation for a competition or just in general. There is a tool called swoostats.net. Swoostats.net, I encourage you to look at it. Maybe I'll put a link in the description. And Rob's analysis of the mechanics for Anakin Data Vault, that's just a very small mechanic in the big scheme of things, has led to a significant uptick of play. Not only that, but also just like a lot of like content creators are pushing this deck, has led to a significant number of play. So for the past 2 weeks, roughly, right, according to Swoosh stats, it has a 65% win rate, right? It wins on average by turns 3, 6 to 7, 4,000 games played.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy, you know, like, and that's by far the highest. I mean, like, right below it is actually Haunt ECL with 1,900 plays. So it's less than half games played. So people are like, definitely, again, this is like not every piece of information is registered here, but Annika Datavault definitely dominating, at least play. It will be played. Expect to play it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, you know, people are going to be in these next, you know, this week, next week, this past weekend, they're going to be testing, like the big competitive teams are going to be testing out. It's like, okay, we know what this deck is. We feel like there's going to be a lot of this out there. Do we continue to play this? So do the players who have been playing Anakin Datavault continue to play it? Or do they start to tech against it, knowing that other people are going to be playing it? And they come up with a solution for it. I don't know what the answer is here, and you know, we'll start to find out. But 2 weeks ago when we were talking with Pasquale, one of the things that he mentioned, and I do think that this is something that it does prove out a little bit from this past weekend. Now, a lot of this past weekend's like tournaments were all minor tournaments that are store showdowns or like 40-person events at most. But we saw an uptick in GAR ECL. And to Pasquale's point, having a lot of shielded units kind of blunts Anakin's ability to trade up, because he has to trade into a unit multiple times in order to get rid of it on the board. And the value, the backbone of this Anakin deck is that you are basically always value trading. Value trading means is that you take a unit, you throw it into something, and you either stay on the board or you get something valuable out of it, and you're diminishing your opponent's board state by removing their units or other things like that, so that you get to the point that you've dropped something big enough that they can't deal with it by the later turns because you've been kind of slowly grinding them down. And then you've got the Anakin flip to like just start murdering things.
Yeah. So Corey, when you, I don't know if you were testing last night a little bit, actually. How has your testing experience been with this new set and going into what you think the meta is going to be?
I think the meta is going to be a lot of Han 4, which is the pilot Han.
Yeah,
he's a lot of that because he's super fast. And obviously Anakin Datavault because it won something. And then Han Green won something. Well, I shouldn't say Anakin Datavault won something because I don't think it did win, but it was well represented and is very popular. But Han one green is a crazy deck. I mean, the deck is ramping. You can get to 7 resources on turn 3 sometimes. It's like you're putting out super big units super early before other people can do other things to stop you. And so that deck, I think is
I think interestingly enough, the deck that. Well, first of all, I agree with you. It's a very powerful deck. Don't get me wrong. But one deck and one leader specifically that has always been a menace, I think, and also stomps Han 1 green. Like, it's like not, it's like barely winnable. Like, Kira. Kira Datavault, and now a Kira Red see popping up because of the top of the summit. Those decks are absolutely brutal, and they're control decks. So if I see someone with this like blue-green villainy, Kira nonsense, blue-red villainy with Kira specifically, those matches are so painful just to be part of. No matter what you're playing. What you're playing.
No, they are. Know? It's like, well, I'm just going to put something out so it can just die. And it's like, they're just waiting to just get finished off, and like you can't do anything. It's very, you feel so helpless. Yeah, I do want to mention one deck that I might see a lot of play that we could haven't really seen too much talked about, but Hantu blue with Security Complex and just go full aggro and just hit with and just use Ogdo Bogdo as like your turn one play, shield it, and just hit for five as many times as you can.
I think that's, I've played against a couple. I didn't know what to do with that deck when I first saw it, because I do see a lot of those guys coming out. Not many people are on the Force version. Like, I think the Force version is actually better overall. And I'll tell you why, like, later. But I think that I saw it, I didn't know what to freaking do with it. But the Ogdobogdo shielded is boom, 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 is definitely very painful. I will say
you usually get 10 from it, at least. So it's, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah,
but then the 25-point health is rough. But you have other things in that deck that are also going to help give you that reach. Because you can get Poe out early also, right? And you're playing a 6-4 at 4 resource cost, essentially. And if you wanted to, you could throw the shield on him instead. And you have Nemec, obviously, Karas Nemec in there. And that just going to help you push that damage as well, because you can get 3 in, or if they don't get 3, you're going to get 2 in. So you have this reach with this deck, which is crazy, and you're always pushing things out early. And it's like all these Han decks are cheating things out. And it's like, what the heck? It's not fair. Like, I need more help here. I can't ramp fast enough.
Yeah, I am curious to see how control starts to uptick, because to your point, Gil, I do think Kira is a strong match into Han, and any of these things that are dropping like one big thing a turn, which is basically kind of what Han is doing. Even like Piet Red is doing that too. Yeah. It's like as you're playing, like, now Han has the ability to kind of go with U-wing reinforcements, but there is,
he just loses to Han 4 Tarkin Town. Like, I think it's a bad matchup for that.
No, I know. It's,
you're going to see a lot of those. It's like, where are you? It's like, you got to dodge.
Well, that's exactly it. You got to dodge.
Yeah. I still think, also in the meta going into the weekends and the PQ season, you know, the Quinlans, Cad Tarkin Towns, still going to be a problem. You got to deal with those as well. Pretty much all the classics are going to be in the contention. I will say that one deck combination that I did see in Swoo stats, again, take this with a grain of salt, because Swoo stats is sometimes, you know, not super accurate in that people quit, or, you know, like, they don't play right, etc., like that. But one that was very interesting was Sabe Yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And people talk, I know I tested this, people have been playing this, people ask about this. Sabe Yellow, 400 for the past however many weeks, 2 weeks, 472 games, almost a 75% win rate. I don't know who's playing Sabe and getting 75% win rates, but that is obscene to me.
Like, that's pretty high.
I don't know what they're doing to do that. I'm sure it has something to do with some type of cunning / bando, exhaust, pump, like, you know, type stuff. Top decking discard really, really luckily as well. Cause, like, yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah. There's definitely some luck involved in that deck, but I think if you can pilot it well, you're at an advantage in a lot of situations, because you do have that, you know, discard ability. And when you flip, you can look at the hand to discard a card. I don't know. I've played it. I played it a couple times. I haven't lost to it, so I don't know if they're good players or not. But I think that there is something there. I think it'll be a lot more prevalent once rotation hits, though.
Yeah, I think like a lot of double yellow in general is a very high skill cap deck, just in general. So, but it's also very high floor. Like you have to work to get to that floor. Like, if you don't. It's one of those decks that rewards you understanding what your opponent is trying to do. So when you're looking at the top cards of their deck, like, so you're using her ability to mill out cards from the top of her deck, choosing correctly is very important there. Taking out the key pieces to an opponent's deck, you have to be able to understand what those key pieces are going to be if you see them. There's just going to be, but that was always the case, like double yellow Boba, same thing. It was a very high skill cap deck. I think that's just that the nature of that color combination.
Okay. Well, I would love to potentially discuss who we think. So there's probably like a dozen or so PQs this weekend. aside from what we think is going to be like the basic ones, like Anakin, Kira, Han 4, Tarkin Town, etc., which Corey, if you're, I think you're working on a Han 4 Tarkin Town video, if I'm not mistaken.
You're spoiling him.
Yeah, no, I'm hoping to get it out before. I want to try to get out the video before the PQ start up, but we're going to invite the RSGs, which is Red Seal Gaming in Madawan.
Let's say it's
in New Jersey. They have a PQ each season, and McClunky kind of came out and showed off there a bunch of times. But Evan T, he was the winner last set for the Legends of the Force. So I want to talk to him about his deck and what he's changed with the Han 4 Tarkin Town, because he piloted that to a win in the PQ.
I've played against Evan on a number of different occasions, and Evan is an incredibly good player. He's a great guy on top. He kind of is a little bit like Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, he kind of tries to go off the beaten path a little bit. I don't know if he was the originator of the Han Tarkin Town deck, but no, he's not, but he was playing, like, his variant of it was different when we were playing it at the, when he played it at the PQ at RSG. He likes to put, like, some really interesting wrinkles into his decks. So I'll be curious to hear what he has to say, Corey, if he's giving away all the secret tech to you.
Yeah, I actually specifically asked him. I was like, is this okay if we try to get this video before the PQ season starts? Because you might be spoiling some of the things you're trying to do here. But he's all game for it. So yeah, we're looking forward to getting that out to you guys.
Expect a late night Friday drop right before the weekend. Yeah. So you'll have a couple hours before you have to travel.
Hey, you can get this podcast in and then get another one the next day.
That's
what I'm saying. So last round, one last thing. So deck combinations, deck leaders that you think will provide that secret spice that might take a win this weekend. I'll start, give you guys some time to think, but I think, because I've played this combination before, I think it's very powerful. Yoda green, force.
Mm,
not
force.
Data Vault, force.
Mm, force, yeah.
Is ridiculous. It is a great deck, right? You have a lot of restore. You have longevity, a card draw, you would have whatever. Your late game is ridiculous with Yoda.
Yoda the right? Yoda is dumb.
Yoda unit is one of the scariest things to see if you can't deal with it.
Especially if you do stuff like
things.
Yeah, constantly kill stuff every time you use the force, which is ridiculous. If you throw in like any sentinel like Chirrut that uses the force, or Wild card that is also pretty spicy, that I think is really fun just in general. Clone. The clone card for seven.
God. Dude, I got clones. Like, you clone Yoda. You put Yoda out and then you clone him. And it's like, what am I going to do here? I can't do anything now.
You can't. And you have to board wipe. You have to board wipe to get that off the thing. And
I took a screenshot of that happening to me when that happened. I was like, what? What is happening right now? I didn't even know this was going to be a thing. And I got to pay attention to it.
Yeah, really powerful deck. I think it still struggles into some decks like Han 2 Blue, because Han 2 Blue could just do things faster, right? Like if you play Krayt before they play Yoda, that's 8 damage that just essentially kills him or anything like that. I think he's still, and even like the red-blue combinations, I think gives him a hard time, whether it be villainy or heroism. So like, Kylo Tarkin Town, Kylo Red, for example. But I think, depending on the meta, if you're attacking a wide meta, Yoda Green is probably going to make some top eights. That's my bold prediction.
I like it. You want it? You got something, Rob?
I'm not sure. Like, I don't think there's anything that's there yet, but I am interested in this, the Rey Yellow deck that's been floating around as a Rey from Legends of the Force. It's I've played against it and it's really interesting because early on what you're doing is you're basically building it on the back of cycling Rey unit to the top of your deck and dealing out stupid amounts of damage because you're using Rey with the Rey leader ability, then you're getting the damage from the Rey unit, and it can just really keep your opponent in check. I'm not sure it's there yet, but if it gets like one or two more tools, I think this might be one to watch out for.
I was surprised you didn't say Thrawn. You're your boy.
I still need to test Thrawn. I want my boy to work. Believe me, I want him to work. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's as, the honest truth is, I don't know if he is as strong as like just straight up like Kira Data Vault, right? Or Kira Red, right? You know, like Kira is just the premier, the premier control leader right now. Thrawn, I think, thrives better as a little bit more of like kind of a mid-rangey, kind of the way that you would play Krennic back in set one. And there are some, like Thrawn for yellow is, I think there is some play line there. And obviously, if you've been on our Discord, we've been toying around with it. And I think there is, I do think there is some legs there. I just don't know if it's as good, because it's not as hard to control as like Kira. So into other control matchups, you don't do as well. And it still has some holes into the Hans and the Anakins if you don't get the right cards.
Yep. Cool. All right, how about you?
Just to throw one that I think haven't talked about yet, but it's the worst version of Cad and Quinlan, but Padme, Tarkin Town. Why not? Throw it in there.
Hey, that color combination in heroism has proven to be good.
I mean, all you need is Harris Demick, right? And then you're good to go. So it's got it.
You know, are you playing heroic? Then you're playing red.
Yeah. So, all right. No, I could see it. Because again, it's a color combination that works. So it's just different leader, right? And who knows what spice people are coming up with. So,
like I said, it's not as good as a Cad and a Quinlan and does the same thing. But those guys are going away. So if you like those decks, this might be the one for you next set.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do like Cad Tarkin Town too. Yoda Killer actually just did like a big expose on that, so I'd expect to see that as well this weekend. I don't know if it's going to take anything, but it'll be there.
But that's old news. Everyone knows that Cad Tarkin Town is like pretty good.
Yeah. No. I know. But like if you watch the most recent like deck tech on that one, it is. There's a lot of the same stuff, but there's some interesting wrinkles in it that have gotten added in through the new set. I think it has more avenues than it did even previously.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, we'll see if it starts summoning. Moving on to the last part. So this was some topics that were brought in by our community, Discord community. The podcast submissions, so some really interesting stuff. One person had mentioned that they wanted to understand the current state of the game, right? Because, and what our thoughts were on that. Well, they mentioned how one of their local stores stopped hosting and doesn't even carry the product anymore, and that they are seeing this as other places as well. So have we. I mean, I know I've seen it. I've seen it. So the question is, will Swoo survive in the long haul? We'll start off with that because there's a bunch of other supplemental questions to that, like how do you build your community, et cetera, like that. Look, I'll post it up to you guys. We'll start with you, Corey, since we just did the meta segment. What do you think?
Well, if you saw the PAX Unplugged in-flight plan, I think they call it something, in-flight report.
In-flight report.
They talk about Swoo and the future of Swoo and things that they're planning. And when you have a card game like a TCG like this, you need to make the people that make the game, if they're not planning well in advance, that game's going to die, right? I feel like FFG is planning far in advance and doing a lot of things to help promote the game for the future. Like, we know Galactics is coming in July again next year. We have this whole season one that we're starting in. So as far as where I think the game is going to survive, I do believe it survives at least another year, if not, you know, it gets stronger. That's because I think FFG is planning for the future, which if you don't have that, you will fail.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't disagree with you there, Corey. I mean, like, the plan is in place from the FFG side of things, the developer side of things. I think what we're seeing is sort of a little bit of the natural progression of card games, right? So a card game comes out and it explodes, right? Like if it's a popular IP, if it's something that people, you know, really are interested in, you're going to have every store, and particularly also if there's hype around the product where it's popular and then it becomes hard to get. Every store who can get it is going to get their hands on it. Every store that's going to be able to run events is going to try and run events to try and capitalize on that. And then I think what's starting to happen now is we're seeing sort of the contraction a little bit of that, where the stores who were maybe just kind of dipping a toe in aren't really doing it anymore. And it's just the dedicated stores that have those dedicated communities. Like around us, there, you know, it used to be, it's not that it hasn't been that long, but you know, like there were at least, you know, four stores running stuff in our area. Now it's down to probably about two, but those two have pretty consistent player bases, you know, and we did have to do a little bit of kind of cajoling at our local to kind of, you know, to get people to come out again, but they're now coming out again in force. And, you know, the one that you mentioned earlier, Corey, Red Seal has a very active community, and they have it, you know, they host weeklies, but part of what they do there, and I think that's something that, you know, I don't want to completely get off of this, Gil, but when we start to segue about this, talking about community building, what you can do to kind of mix things up to keep people interested, Red Seal has been doing some interesting things, and we can get back to that.
So I think that if the question is, do you think SWU will survive the long haul? I think the first thing you have to do is define, what is long haul? Are you talking like 30 years? Like an entire lifetime? 60 years? Lifetime?
Magic.
Or are you talking about 5 years? 10 years? Two? Like, what is long? So for me, and again, this is my perspective, long haul is getting past 5 years, right? That means
I agree with that.
That's five years to me means you're breaking boundaries. You are sustained. You're on the positive end to a decade at that point, which it just conceptually, you know, feeling wise is strong, right? Because
most TCGs don't.
Don't. I think the longest Star Wars game that ever came out, when I did some high level research, was like card game specifically, was like 6 years long, right? That was like one of the long. I think it was Star Wars CCG or something like that.
Was that the one from the 90s?
I have no idea. I think it was probably maybe early 2000s. I forget, but like I was doing some research on this. It's like, but over 5 years is solid. So if the question is then, will SWU survive for longer than 5 years? I say yes. Assuming the world doesn't burn down with like some type of crazy trading card game tariff or something like that. You know, I think because they're already working on year four. So like we're already like what Corey said, right? What Corey said was that, or what you mentioned was that if you have a plan, they have a plan. This is the biggest thing that FFG has ever done. And if you looked at it, if anyone's listening for the first time now to our podcast and you haven't seen any of our previous videos, the OP manager, one of the OP, the public representative, Bree, she mentioned how the staff increased for organized play. So organized play is the one who like these weekly local events. From 2 to 8 within a year and a half or whatever. A company does not invest quadruple their staff for just that one team to then quit like right away. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I think that will it make it to 5 years? I'm like 95% confident that they will. Will they make it to 10? That's a stretch because it's still too early. Mm-hmm. But I would say yes. I personally have a lot of reasons why I think that's the case. But if, you know, I would love your guys' opinions. Do you think that's an accurate, if we say long haul, do you think that's an accurate assessment? Or do you think it should
absolutely
be like longer?
Five years, like I mentioned, like most TCGs, majority of the TCGs will not last 5 years, right? They will last a few years.
Most of them, it's like 2 years, I think.
Yeah. And so like 5 years is definitely a long haul for a game. Like when you look at it against Magic, it doesn't seem like a lot, right? But five
Magic
years is a long
is
time.
Like, Magic is an outlier, right? Magic is the exception to the rule. I mean, like they're the ones who sort of kind of broke the mold on it and got it to be popularized. It's not like they weren't the first ones to do collectibles, but you know, they're the ones who are the most successful at it. But even now, like, I mean, I don't want to, you know, kind of completely badmouthing, but it's turned into Fortnite. You know, it's any IP that they want they can throw at it at this point because right. people.
Well, I don't want to talk about I don't want to talk about Magic. Too yeah, much. Yeah, it's not a Magic podcast.
No, I know. But to that point, like the other thing to look at is that what like places like GameStop, for example, have been doing. They're looking to move into the collectible card game space. They've kind of seen like a weakening in physical sales of video games, and they have all this retail space, and they're trying to figure out how to kind of transition. And one of the ways that they've been talking about doing that is by getting into the collectible card game space. So now you can run into your local GameStop and they might actually have like singles on the shelf, things like that. I don't know if it's quite there yet, but like if you look at like one of their Black Friday things was they were selling like these basically blind boxes of
Are you seeing Star Wars stuff?
Not Star Wars yet. GameStop? Not Star Wars. It's mainly Magic and Pokemon, but where I'm kind of going with this is that there's a market push for this, like for CCGs as a whole. Right. And I think that means that in general, if Star Wars makes it to 5 years and the proof is kind of in the pudding at that point, there's going to be market support for it down the line.
For me, like what I'm excited about this game for the future of it is how excited the employees were when we talked to them.
Yes.
At PAX, right? We got to go to a content meetup, got to talk to a lot of the employees and the people involved in the game specifically, and they're super excited about Star Wars and the future of this game. And so them being excited helps make me excited, knowing that they're, you know, committed to this game. And even Jim Cartwright's got a tattoo on his arm of all the aspects. I mean, you don't do that if you're not going to support that game, right?
I think at a high level, I think we're all in agreement that we think it's going to go for the long haul because of investments with staff, like emotional investments, it seems, as well as financial investments. And then there's a market out there, like Rob said, that there's spaces are trying to get product for collectible card games because there's money in that, right? Mm-hmm. But now, so I think we're in agreement there. Now, one of the other questions that our podcast members posed was that, you know, local stores. Stop hosting locals, don't carry product, etc. Now, I want to dig into that a little bit deeper with you guys, but here's my opinion on that, right? I get it. A local store needs to make a profit. It's not worth it because the mom and pop shops can't compete with like the big box retailers out on price, so they have to like invest into other ways. However, it's really difficult when they keep getting undercutted for product. And people are going to buy that product instead of theirs. Now, that to me, that like one of the reasons why product doesn't get sold at the local game store. Now, however, I will say this. There were so of the stores around us that used to hold this product or do hold it. A lot of game stores also just didn't put in a lot of effort like doing to support the game. There's stores that refuse to put in air conditioning, right? There are stores that refuse to make space for the 6 to 12 people who would come on a weekly basis when the game first came out so they could play and give you $20-$30 a person because they're catering to their locals that do other stuff like, you know, painting. They'll give an entire table which could fit 4 to 6 people to one person so that they can like paint like miniatures, right? So of course people are not going to go to your store if they don't even have room to play, right? Another one, I think that, you know, I'm not trying to blast local game stores. I'm thinking that these are things that I've seen with the stores that have not succeeded with Star Wars Unlimited. Again, each region does it a little bit differently. The last thing I want to share is that they don't advertise. They don't put it on their Discords. They don't put it on their website. They don't put it into the Star Wars Unlimited, like, actual, like, website so that you can show that you're doing weekly plays, which is how I found my stores to begin with. Like, oh. There's this store doing a weekly. I'm going to go to this. Or they're doing a store show. I'm going to go to this. Stores I would never in a million years would have ever visited. But now I go there all the time. Or I've spent a lot of money at those stores. And so I think that there's a little introspective there. But I've kind of blabbed around a little bit. So I would love your perspective. I think we start with Corey. Rob, what do you think?
So I agree. I think that depending on the local, if it's not their bread and butter, because like here's the other thing, like game stores are varied in a lot of ways. Some of them are going to cater to cards and only cards. Some of them are going to be a little bit more mixed. They're going to do miniatures. They're going to do, you know, card games. They're going to do board games. They're going to do all these other things. The ones that I'm seeing that are continually supporting and being successful at running local events are, for better or for worse, card shops. Places that are dedicated to players who play card games for the most part. And they're doing the things that you're talking about. They're promoting it. There is a level of like local support. So I've organized events for Star Wars Unlimited, amongst other things. And you do need someone in there to kind of bang the drum a little bit at each of your stores, you know, with your locals and encourage people to come out. It can't just be the store. There needs to be enthusiasm within the community as well. And sometimes it takes a little bit of like cajoling. Sometimes it takes a little bit of kind of like, you know, just bearing that standard for a little bit. You don't have to do it like all on your shoulders, though. A good store will support you and, you know, support the game in many ways. But giving that little bit of extra push, talking with the store owners or the nightly managers, the people who are helping to run the events, and finding out what you can do to kind of get those things going, that always also helps.
Yeah,
particularly if you're having problems.
Great points. I think what you pointed to, Gil, with the fact that it's hard to find places to play the game, and where do you find those places? The stores do need to do a better job of that, but it really does come down to also some of these, the player base, like, and within your location. There's a store that's close to where my work is, and I love that store. The owner of that store is amazing. The guy's always helping out, like trying to do his best. And he tried to get Star Wars going at his store, and he did his best to get it going. It could, but he didn't have enough player base because it was definitely a Pokemon shop for the most part, and Magic. So most of the players are there for that, and so he had a hard time finding a time to run those things because obviously the money's in the other games. And so the only times he would have them just so happened to be the same times other stores were doing it. And so it's like, now you're splitting people and they can't go to the same time. So, so there's conflicts. And so it's like, sometimes maybe is there a way for these stores to communicate with each other? It's, hey, like, we want this game to survive, because if this game does well, we can all like rise with the tide, right? All boats rise with the tide. We can all make money from this if we can start selling the product, because we are all these guys in these, you know, 10-mile, 20-mile radius of each other can work together to make sure that there's games all the time. And so it just started slowly. I just watched it slowly starting to get lower, smaller and smaller. It's like he used to have cases of the boxes, and then he started to go down to a couple cases, and now he's down to one case. It's like, oh, my God, this is so sad.
Yeah. I think, I don't want to beat this too much. I mean, we could probably talk about it more in the future because we're running on time. But suffice to say, there are positive and negatives to what stores have been doing, and probably what's and reasons why there's causing like a decline of participation. I want to go briefly into just the prices of stuff. I think that people are ordering less product, right? You see there's competition between online retailers, big retailers, and then the local game stores, right? I think a lot of people blame Carbonite boxes for whatever reason. I think that, you know, I think if we're talking about the competition, I think the question is the low price good, just on a conceptual level? And then who's it good for? And so I'll start real quickly, given maybe a minute per person here. But for me, I like that the prices are going down, right? You know, because this is not, you know, I love that scalpers can't take advantage of this game. Not yet, anyway. That, I love it. I love that I can't get scalped. I hated it. I hate it for Pokemon. I hate it for, you know, all those other card games. Not that I play it, but like, I don't like that people are doing that, you know, and seeing externally like that there's like a quote unquote crash with Pokemon within the last couple of months or something like that has been, to me, very satisfying because the part of this game is what is it? Collect, compete, and connect. Star Wars has really brought people together. It's a really good community. In that sense, you can collect whatever you want for reasonable price points, And then you can compete with those cards because they give you playsets of everything in every starter deck. Well, I don't see a problem necessarily, but I'm very positive. I'd love your opinion. Corey, how about you?
I'm going to be a little bit on the other side of that, Gil. I am the collector here.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
No, I want my game to be valuable. I want this game to be talked about like, oh my God, you got this $1,000 card. Like, that is crazy. Like, I want that because this is the game I'm playing. And I want to know when I pull this card, hey, this card is going to be $1,000. Like, look at this. The problem with that was partially due to the Carbonite boxes. But I am hoping that they've learned this past year and they are making changes to booster packs, which they're going to talk about next week. So I'm curious to see that. But for me, I'm disappointed that you can get a Twilight box for $25. That's nuts to me. Like that. I don't know. Like that was a bad set, obviously, and it's your price is going to reflect that. But yeah, I don't like seeing prices go down. But I just hope that if they go down, people are buying them because now there's no excuse to get in this game. It's just I would like to see this game be more valuable personally.
Well, and I think you hit on it there, Corey. It's like if you wanted to get into this game, now's the time, baby. I mean, like you can get boxes of product for relatively inexpensive. And from my standpoint, look, this game is still, in my opinion, one of the best competitive games out there, period. There's not been anything that's come close in my opinion in recent memory. And it's, you know, like we've talked about in the past, it's taken all the best mechanics of a lot of these TCGs and slammed them together in a way that has made sense and is really good. And so it, to me, the health of the game is not necessarily indicative on the prices. I like the fact, to Gil, to your point, that I can get play sets of cards and I'm not going to break the bank. I can try out those, like, and this is the thing that's kind of cool to me. It's like I can buy play sets, I can go out and just buy product, whatever it is, and I can go and try out these wild decks, things that I want to do, and I'm not going to break the bank doing it. I'm not going to feel like, oh, okay, well, I got to proxy that because I don't want to spend $100 on a card per card, and I got to get three of them, and that, you know, that makes my deck stupid expensive. You're going to, you have the opportunity to kind of have the stuff and do it, and then, like, who knows, down the line, this stuff may end up being worth more if the game stays alive long enough. But again, and it's something I just want to kind of point out. We got, like, as a community, we got to get out to the stores. You know, I know it's tough and I know sometimes it's discouraging if, like, you only get like 2 to 3 players. But one of the things that I've learned over time is if you build it, they will come. Like, it's, you know, not to quote Field Dreams, which, there, but if you show up, if you are consistent, the community will start to grow. And then you get to a point where you reach that critical mass and it'll snowball. But in order to get there, you got to start showing up.
I think there's a lot of things with the Star Wars community that's a little bit different than other TCGs, primarily that, like, we're middle, like, a lot of it is middle-aged, slow/older men. You know, that have wives and kids or partners or whatever like that. The demographics don't really aren't conducive to, like, you know, super, like, what I mean is that the lifestyle of that demographic is not necessarily conducive to doing locals on a regular basis. However, I will say that Star Wars, because of the low accessibility point, as in, like, low barrier entry, right, the friendly IP and FF and not necessarily too much, like, drama, I'll say. Like, Riftbound has Riot, which has been a lot of problems, I'll say, with, like, sexism and all types of stuff. So there's a different community that goes, that's attracted to that. But Star Wars, like, you can go to, and last thing I'll say before we end today, going to PAX Unplugged, was doing some recording. I saw two young women who were playing this game, the Hoth battle. And, you know, I politely said, are you playing Star Wars? Like, hey, we do a podcast. You know, how do you feel about the game or whatever? They loved it. Absolutely loved it. And they were asking, they were looking to buy the set one starter decks. That is the stuff, like, I like to see, because the game is good. People like it. It's not a demographic that's typical right now, which is, means that there's a growth potential. To me, that's beautiful. And I think at the end of the day, that's why this is going to do the long haul. Of course, there are bumps along the road. I agree with you, Corey. Carbonites could probably be doing better. I actually agree with you there. Like, probably could be done better. I'm not the expert there. I like that this cheap but I know that's not everyone's cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, gentlemen, we can talk. We'll talk more about community building maybe next week and some other stuff, because I know there's a lot of things to talk about. We're getting on the hour, gentlemen. Appreciate your time today. As always, it's a pleasure. To everyone else out there, thank you so much. And until next time, may the force be with you.